What's up, Airless listeners? It's your boy, Elliot Aruna. Thank you for rocking with me with another episode here on the Airless Podcast, a lifestyle marketing podcast. You can follow me right now on Instagram, ELLIOTARUNAH. I know I've been off the grid for a moment, but I'm back with a new episode as we go into the life and also music profession of Brandon Jackson. He is founder and CEO of KDMR Music. You can follow him right now on Instagram at BJKicks. He'll be talking to us more about some of the things he's been working on in the personal end of his life, how he got started within the music industry, especially within marketing, and how you can better your efforts as a artist, musician, from a marketing standpoint. So sit right here as we talk about marketing within the music industry and a little bit more about Brandon Jackson. We're here with our Airless of the Week, Brandon Jackson, who is a marketing and branding expert, author, and host of the Music Business Dreams podcast. In 2011, he founded KDMR Music, a company that provides educational products and consulting services to those interested in building successful careers in the music industry. Through his podcast and YouTube channel, he has provided free music business education to thousands of independent musicians, in over 22 countries. Brandon also provides marketing, branding, and photography services to non-music clients as a freelancer through his work. Or through this work, he has helped clients, including Blue Cross Blue Shield, Jones Lang LaSalle, and media personality Lala Anthony to extend their brands well into the future. You can follow him right now on Instagram at BJKicks. And I think that's where we're going to get started, Brandon. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
No doubt, man. So let's get started with actually your Instagram tag, BJKicks. I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about music and your brand, but I also want to dive into a little bit of your personal life. Can you explain to us where the BJKicks comes from if you're doing music for the most part?
Sure. So, Elliot may be familiar with the story because he was there, but to make the long story short, I used to sell sneakers in high school, and BJKicks was the name of my website and business, and it became my nickname. And so this was, 2004, 2005? I was like 15. And when I decided I wanted to rap, I ended up using that name as my rap name, and so it's just a name that has stuck over the years. Most people who know me either know me as Kicks or as BJ, but almost no one really calls me by my name. So that's where the name comes from.
Yeah, that's definitely facts. You are in my phone as Kicks with a Z to be exact too. So I might need to change that to S because we're grown ups now, but it's definitely a K-I-C-K-Z.
That's funny.
For sure. So, you know, with that said, I mean, obviously, I've known you for quite some time, but the listeners are just getting their first plug into you. So what made you interesting, or when did you first fall in love with marketing?
That's an interesting question. So around high school, around the same time when I was doing selling sneakers and things, I was always interested in business. And when you're in high school in North Carolina, the business classes you take, like general business, and then you take like a marketing class. So I was in a club called DECA, and DECA basically is like a little competition. It's almost like some people may have heard of FBLA, or there's other vocational clubs where basically you get together and you do competitions based on specific industries or specific subsets in an industry. So my category was apparel and accessories marketing, because at the time I was selling sneakers online. And so that was kind of my first glimpse into the marketing process, just taking those classes, you know, learning kind of the basics of marketing. But around the same time as I was selling sneakers, I was getting into graphic design. So by the time I'd gotten out of high school, I'd actually built up a pretty good resume, doing flyers for different artists, like local artists, and getting into, like, when I was in college, I did flyers for different party promoters and things like that. And initially, my degree was just in general business administration. I ended up changing it to marketing when I realized that what I was doing was creating marketing materials, but marketing was a lot more than just design. So I wanted to be able to go behind the scenes and explain why I was making specific design decisions. And so that's what first kind of got me interested in marketing and, you know, it's brought me all the way to where we are now.
Awesome. So as far as, you know, your music industry kind of love, you talked about being starting off being a rapper, not even starting off per se, because you started off selling shoes, right? But you end up transcending and moving on to music as well. What really got your start into music?
So it's interesting. I've always been, you know, kind of surrounded by music, you know, growing up in church. You know, that's always, you know, where I gravitated toward. My sister's godfather actually was our minister of music. And so I remember when I was a kid, I was like begging him to teach me how to play piano. And I begged my mother for a keyboard. So when I was 7, my mother bought me a keyboard for Christmas. We actually never bought lessons, but I would always just kind of play around with music. So when I got started making music, I was selling shoes. So I had all kinds of extra money. And there was a kid at our school who was basically making music and he was singing. And I was like, oh, I can do that. So I bought all this. Basically, through that equipment, I started singing and quickly realized that singing was not going to be the way I was going to get it. So funny enough, I ended up just kind of starting to rap from there, just kind of on a whim, because some people that I was cool with got into like a little rap beef. And so I was like, all right, well, I will make a song because they won't expect me to make a song. right. And so that is what first got me interested in rapping, because I realized I was actually kind of good at it. And so that was how I got started in music. And I mean, from there, I was rapping, then I started making beats, and eventually started working for labels. And we can kind of get into that story if you'd like.
Yeah, definitely. My next question was going to be kind of like your journey throughout music from that point on. And also wanted to get some kind of insight on who or some artists or labels that kind of inspired you along the way throughout your career up until this point.
Oh, yeah, certainly. So, I mean, of course, starting out like any little kid, you know, Michael Jackson kind of made me want to find a way onto a stage somewhere. Because it's just, you know, you grow up doing the moves and watching performances and stuff. It was, you know, it was just electrifying to see. And I wanted to affect people in that way. And then outside of that, I guess my first favorite rapper was Jay-Z. But then when Kanye West came on the scene, he was the one that made me feel like I could do it. Because, you know, before Kanye came on the scene, at least the era we grew up in, we grew up with like 50 Cent and Jay-Z and all kinds of gangster rap. So rap wasn't accessible because, I mean, I'm not living this lifestyle that these people are talking about. So it just didn't really match up with my identity. But when Kanye came out and he's wearing like polos and fitted jeans and stuff like that, I was like, okay, I could do this. And he's rapping about being self-conscious and even rapping about Jesus at times. So I was like, okay, this lines up a lot more. So you can be a rapper and talk about this stuff too. So that was my early musical influence. As I got to college, I found out about a producer who is from where we are, Raleigh, North Carolina. And his name is Ninth Wonder. He had a group called Little Brother in the early 2000s. And he went on to produce for Jay-Z and a lot of others, Destiny's Child, Mary J. Blige. He's got Grammys. He was on Kendrick's latest album. He produced the last track on that album. And so that kind of got me into like this underground rap wormhole. And so, you know, I was rapping, like I said, I started rapping my junior year of high school. And I kept that up almost throughout college. Like I kind of stopped rapping my junior year of college. And what was going on was at the time I was just going through, you know, just changing, evolving as a person, you know, you grow. So I was running a tutoring program. And to make the long story short, one thing I realized was the kids in the housing community, the project that I was tutoring, their only role models were like people on TV and rappers, right? And they were growing up in an environment where everything was just chaos. Like there's police raids, half of their parents aren't home, you know, half of them aren't allowed to have dads in the home because it's a Section 8 community. And so it was just like, for me to see that and, you know, be working with these kids on a daily basis, it seemed juvenile to go back to my room and like rap and try to have fun. And so I was like, all right, maybe rap isn't what I want to do. But I had had other experiences where I had been able to, you know, produce for other groups on campus. And so I'd had other things where I was like, okay, I can go behind the scenes. And so, you know, kind of a converging of two worlds, I ended up by chance finding an internship with Ninth Wonder's label, which is Jamla Records. They had opened up remote internships and I found it on Twitter. And so I applied, didn't hear back. And I found out that, because Ninth Wonder had a film called The Wonder Year at the time. And it's basically a documentary talking about, you know, a year in his life. And so they were screening that documentary in Winston-Salem. So I took my last $20, filled up my mom's car that I was driving at the time, and drove to Winston from Greensboro to make it to this screening, and kind of pitched myself in person, like in front of Ninth and his videographer. And, you know, we talked for like a good 30 minutes. And then he's like, all right, well, I got to go, man, but we'll talk about this marketing stuff. And so, you know, 2 months later, I get the email that I got the internship. And so that was my first real job in the music business. But yeah, so those were my early influences and kind of how I got started.
That's dope. So as far as your experience with Jamla Records, kind of what was the biggest takeaway for you when you went into the internship, what you learned, and then after, what was the biggest takeaway?
Right. So there were a couple of lessons that I learned working with Jamla, because I was fortunate to be affiliated with the label at a time where they were really just kind of getting ramped up. This was 2011. Rhapsody had just released her second mixtape, which was called Thank Her Now. And so that was the mixtape that kind of got her, you know, a lot of blog placement. She was getting blog placements before just because she was affiliated with Ninth. But this was kind of the first time they were like, okay, this chick can rap and she can rap just as well as all the other guys. But one thing that I noticed during that time was, because Jamla had a really big roster. There were like 9 rappers and another 8 producers on the label at the time. And so it was like every month they were releasing a project and they were releasing all the music for free and just steady grinding, performing at these kind of hole in the wall spots and taking whatever opportunities came their way. So the biggest lesson that I learned in that was your work ethic. I can specifically speak on Rhapsody. Rhapsody used to sleep in the studio. She would like never leave. And, you know, today she's on Roc Nation and she's killing it. She's got her last album was not, or her first album, excuse me. Well, it was her first major label album. Layla's Wisdom was nominated for 2 Grammys. She has a Grammy for being on Kendrick's To Pimp a Butterfly album. She was the only feature on that record, but I can tell you, she literally stayed in the studio day and night. And so that really showed me how much someone has to grind to really make it in the business. And then the other lesson I learned was about not burning bridges. Because the way that internship ended, well, it didn't necessarily end, but there was a situation where I think I may have said something on Twitter that may have seemed unfavorable at the time. And right. And so, you know, I'm in college, I'm young. So I'm just, no one can touch me. I feel like I'm, you know, I've got all the knowledge in the world and I'm God's gift to the planet. Right. And so long story short, I wasn't carrying myself in the most humble way. Right. And so that rubbed some people the wrong way, and rightfully so, because honestly, I was a jerk. Right. And so I learned that, you know, people may not remember what you say to them or something that you do for them, but they'll remember if you make them feel a certain way. And that can work to your advantage or it can work to your detriment. And so, you know, we were able to get past that incident, but it definitely strained the relationship. So I had to work that much harder to make sure that everyone knew that I had their best interest in mind and I wasn't someone trying to leech off of them or anything like that. So it taught me a lot about how to operate in the music business, because the music business is small. So if you cross someone the wrong way, it's going to come back to bite you later.
For sure. So you mentioned just a few moments ago about artists grinding and Rhapsody literally sleeping in the studio day in and day out, and really making sure that she puts her best foot forward within, you know, her craft. I see here that, you know, KDMR Music, as we stated earlier, you know, you provide consulting services for artists. So I wanted you to tell us more about KDMR Music and what does the KDMR stand for?
Sure. So KDMR Music, I started also in 2011. I was interning for the label and we went down to Atlanta for a hip hop festival called A3C. While we were there, I met a young lady and she was a rapper. She was a singer, but she was really just kind of doing it for fun. So I met her because I just happened to be standing in the area where they were holding a cypher. And so she's rapping and she was affiliated with some of the people that I was there with. So we had some mutual friends. We were running in the same circles. So we just kind of became cool on that trip. So it turned out I ended up driving her home from Atlanta to Durham because she's actually from Canada. So she was going to take a bus to Toronto. So we're talking, chopping it up about our eventual goals, our dreams. And she was like, well, look, if I, you know, decide to do this music thing seriously, I want you to be my manager. And so KDMR Music actually started out as KDMR Management. And it comes from a quote that I found online back then. And the quote is by someone named Christian Kahn, who I've never found anything else by this guy. So I don't know if he's like a fake motivational speaker or what he does. But the quote was, to those who tell me I should quit dreaming and just face reality, I respond to them, keep dreaming and make reality. So the name of my company is funny. It's an acronym, but the company name is basically a slogan, and it stands for keep dreaming and make reality. Because that's basically what I want to do for artists. Like the goal is to help artists navigate the music industry. But by showing these artists that, you know, they can navigate the industry, they don't have to be, you know, Jay-Z or Kendrick to make money in music, then we can inspire more artists to follow their dreams and, you know, do the work to make them reality. And if we can inspire people to do something as, you know, seemingly trivial as make music for a living or seemingly far-fetched, right, then let's say that one kid that's growing up in that Section 8 community that hasn't seen anything past his block, maybe he'll be inspired and say, hey, I can be a lawyer because this guy went out and he was able to be a rapper because he put in that work. So if I want to be a lawyer, I can put in the same amount of work. So the purpose of the organization is twofold. Obviously, you know, we want to have fun. We want to have success in music. But the larger goal for me is I eventually want to build a multimedia center. I haven't decided where I want it to be located. But basically, the goal is to have a state-of-the-art facility that does both film as well as recording. And so I'll run the facility, you know, it'll basically be like, you know, if let's say Mary J. Blige is in town on tour and she wants to record. So she can hire us, she'll, you know, book the session and there'll be a, you know, world-class trained engineer there, but there'll also be an intern who's a part of our after-school program. So this kid might be 15, 16 years old, but he'll get to be the co-engineer. And basically to see up close how the industry works and what sort of jobs there are. So someone can see that there's a possibility for a career in graphic design or in motion pictures. And you don't necessarily have to be the main guy that's, you know, being a rapper or a singer or whatever. But there are all sorts of jobs in this industry that people don't know about. And, you know, especially as Black or in the Black community, we tend to shy our children away from creative fields. You know, if you see a kid that's drawing pictures in his notebook as opposed to doing math, you're like, oh no, you're wasting paper. You're never going to make a career out of this drawing. You need to go do your math work, right? And so it's important for children to, you know, learn the science, engineering, technology, and things like that. But without the arts, the world doesn't work, right? Without designers, Apple never makes the iPhone. So there's value in art, but a lot of times we as minorities don't see it because we don't have the same opportunities that other people do to flex those muscles. So I want to give kids that space to be able to show those, to show their skills in that way.
Awesome. So as far as from a music marketing standpoint, while KDMR Music does do more, or you're looking to do more educational pieces and put really opportunities within the faces of those within the community who may not ever see those type of spaces, from an artist standpoint, when it comes to their marketing efforts for their music, especially when it comes to the digital realm that we're in with social media being so high power now, everything being easily accessible, what are some of the struggles that artists should, or upcoming artists per se, should look for to face, and how should they overcome them?
Okay. So the biggest struggle that an independent artist is going to face in 2018 is attention, right? We're in the attention economy, as Gary Vee might say, where there's, like you said, there's social media, there's TV, there's music streaming. There's literally like hundreds of albums that come out every week. And every consumer that you're trying to reach has access to your album as well as those 100 other albums that came out last Friday. Right. So what is it that you're going to do to make sure that your music matters to someone enough so that when they see that Jay-Z and Beyonce just released a new album, they'll wait and play yours instead. Right. So that's the biggest challenge that artists face, is not knowing how to find that audience, not knowing how to keep them engaged, not knowing how to really basically market their music. So that when it comes out, it has maximum impact. So, you know, you got a lot of people who I talk to who, when they come to me, they're like, look, I just, you know, I've been working on this album for like 3 years. I finally put it out and I'm only getting like 50 plays on SoundCloud and no one's paying attention. How do I get more eyes on it? So the way you combat that is, you know, there's a few different ways, right? You can go through traditional media outlets. You can reach out to blogs and newspapers and, you know, some of the bigger sites like Pitchfork or Complex. But if you don't have any fans, those media outlets aren't going to pay attention to you, because they're, the way they see it, they're trying to find people to put on their platform that are going to draw more eyes to their content. So if you've only got 100 fans, there's no point in Complex posting your music except to say, oh, there's this guy with only 100 fans that you should be paying attention to. And when that happens, it's because your music is just phenomenal, right? So instead of, you know, using those types of outlets early on, what I advise are direct-to-fan strategies. So we really do a lot as far as coaching people on how to develop their live show. You know, it's a myth that you have to be big in your local area before you can move on. But one of the greatest ways to gain fans or to win someone over that's never heard of you is your live show, right? Especially for someone who's a music fan, they're going to be at the show regardless. So if they're already a music fan, they're showing you that they're willing to pay their money and spend time, you know, out there at a venue to support whatever local art is there that day, then that's the type of fan you want to have. So we talk about developing your live show, but then beyond that, we talk about using the internet to attract fans, because now, you know, with Facebook, you've got Facebook ads, and Google does ads, and YouTube does ads. So you can pay as little as $5 a day and have hundreds of people viewing your content on a daily basis. And, you know, not all of them are going to be your fans. But the great thing is, now you're getting outside of people who may be your friends and family, but really people that you don't know. You can target people based on their interests. You can target them based on other artists that they listen to. You can even target them based on like their shopping habits or if they got engaged in the last few months. So if you know your music and you know the type of audience that enjoys your music, then you can really go out and basically buy that attention, and you can get it at a really good price right now. So we talk about those direct-to-fan marketing strategies so that, you know, you can get the traffic in with Facebook ads, but then we talk about things like email marketing and sales funnels so that once you've got that attention, you can maximize it and find ways to monetize it. And so we basically help artists at KDMR Music. We help artists to get to that first point of profitability to where now every dollar that you're sending out on ads is coming back to you in the form of a purchase of a CD, right? So you can build your fan base, you can build profitability. And now that we're profitable and we're really making moves, now we can start to take some of those profits and put them toward the bigger campaigns, like PR campaigns or going for that complex feature. We can start routing our own tours. There's so much data online that's accessible to you that you can really build a career without the need of a major label. And so we kind of fill in those gaps until you're ready to make that jump, if that's what you're interested in doing.
Okay. Now, one thing that just popped up to my mind, within mainstream music per se, let's take the two that are on quote unquote the run right now with Beyonce and Jay-Z. And obviously we all know that they have a phenomenal marketing team put together. But it gets a little dicey for artists, I would assume, when they have been developing an album for over a year, maybe two, they decide on a release date, and then the bomb happens and Drake or Jay-Z or Beyonce drop an album. If they already know, kind of, all right, the mainstream artists are dropping on this day, should they avoid dropping on that day, or should they just go ahead and do what they've already set out to do?
So, I mean, it's not about your release date, right? It's really what's more important than, am I releasing on a day where no one else is releasing? I mean, that might be important from a chart perspective, right? Just because there's only a certain amount of attention to go around. So if I'm trying to be number one, I'm not going to drop on the same day as Jay-Z or Beyonce. But most independent artists aren't in that realm of being able to go number one with their release anyway. So what's really more important to focus on is there an audience that I have that's waiting for me to release this music, right? You don't want to just put something out there and hope that people are paying attention just because it happens to show up on their feed. You want to put something out there and know that your fans, you know, who are loyal to you, have been waiting, and they're going to consume it and tell their friends about it.
Okay, awesome, awesome. So next, when it comes to, I guess, KDMR Music, what is something that you are hoping happens for you and your business in the next 5 years?
Okay, so right now, I actually just released my first book. It's called The Music Marketing Guidebook. Okay. Prior to 2016, KDMR Music existed as just a management platform. So I managed the artist I was telling you about earlier. Her name was Phoenix Pagliacci. Her name is Phoenix Pagliacci. But she was a solo artist. Now she's in a group called The Sorority. You may have seen them 2 years ago. There was a cipher that kind of blew up where it was the International Women's Day cipher. And it was just four female MCs from Canada just throwing bars at you for days. So they've since joined, or they since became a group called The Sorority. And so they're touring around Canada now. But prior to 2016, I was working with her and other artists as a manager. And in 2016, I decided to focus on educating other people who are outside of necessarily contracts with me on these things that I had been learning and implementing for other people. So we have a YouTube channel. We just started a podcast about a month ago that you mentioned earlier. And so right now the goal is to continue building our audience of subscribers and things of that nature, but really just building our community of artists so that they're aware more of these opportunities that are out there, because there are so many ways to make money in the music business. So we just want to make sure that information is out there. So in the immediate future, one of my goals is to, you know, become known as one of the top experts in the field when it comes to navigating as an independent artist. In the next 5 years, I want to look at opening that initial facility. But right now, the goal is just we're working on building that community. We're working on making sure the artists have the education that they need to get started. And then we'll talk about doing more campaigns for bigger artists or artists that we've helped to grow up to a point where they're really starting to build momentum.
Awesome. So you mentioned wanting to be one of the top expert marketers within the music industry. So I have to ask this question now. It kind of deviates from everything that we have been talking about. But in your perspective, who are the top five artists that you go to right now?
My top five artists that I listen to?
Yes.
All right. So right now, I'm pretty high on Kendrick. Okay. I'll pretty much listen to anything he puts out. J. Cole is one of my favorites. I'm going to his festival next month. And after that, those are really the two that I listen to kind of faithfully. Of course, I love Rhapsody. Anytime she puts anything out, I'll pay attention. For better or for worse, I listen to Kanye. I can't say he's one of my favorites right now.
Okay.
But, yeah, I guess he has to get an honorable mention. Yeah, I saw his interview the other day. It was terrible.
I was about to ask you. So, is Kanye honorable mention because of his recent events, or just always been honorable mention?
I think just because of what early Kanye meant for my career. Like, I mean, I have to be honest and say, if it wasn't for Kanye West existing, I probably wouldn't have the career path that I do. Right. So I kind of always show him at least that respect. So I'll listen to just about anything he puts out at least once. I can't even lie. I've only listened to his last album once, but I try to give him the benefit of the doubt. Although here lately, I don't know. I think it might be over for Kanye as far as my record books go. But so yes. That's three. I love Chance. I love Chance the Rapper. And that's honestly, I can't even name another one. I don't listen to enough new music to really say who's my top right now. I'm still listening to the Black Album, right? Like, I'm listening to stuff that I enjoyed from my childhood because I deal with so much music on a daily basis. Right. Listening to new artists or new music feels like work. So
yeah,
when I want to listen to music and relax, I'm probably playing, you know, some old Motown or some old records that I have here in the crib just to you know, de-stress. Because listening to rap, especially, it's just like this is an exam. I'm studying for an exam right now. I can't do this.
Right. So we were talking about just a few moments ago about Kanye and his recent events. What would be some advice to from you to artists when it comes to being outspoken, but also still trying to cater to your audience in a way of where you're like, I want to be this free thinker, as Kanye would say, but also put out dope music. Should they be outspoken and put out dope music, or should they just put out dope music and just chill on their free thoughts?
So, I mean, and maybe this is a better question for someone who's like a PR expert, right? But we all get into this industry because we want to express ourselves and we want other people to accept our expression of ourselves, right? So if you have strong feelings, I think you should put them out there, right? Sometimes it's better to just put them out there in the music and not to in a way that it helps you avoid the controversy. Because in reality, I think the problem with people like Kanye is the assumption on his end that everyone who's listening to him is a fan or cares about him as a person, right? I mean, I guess maybe he thinks he's earned that from over the years, but the reality is there are way more people that don't know you than there are that know you. And that's really no matter how high you get, you know, in this industry. So what you want to do is make sure that you're speaking in a way that your audience understands, right? Mm. The issue with Kanye right now is these people that he's, you know, built up as fans over the years, like me, I grew up with Kanye's music. And now he's just saying things that I absolutely can't rock with, right? Like, and so it's one thing to alienate yourself but still have your fans. It's another to alienate yourself from your fans while expecting them to act favorably to you.
Okay.
So, you know, by all means, be yourself, express yourself, and viewpoints change. People grow. People change. People, you know, change their minds about things. And that's fine. But you have to understand that people aren't obligated to hang on to your every word and support you. At the end of the day, this is just music. You know, we take it seriously because we're the artists, we're the creators, we're the ones who work years on projects. But to most people, you know, this is what they listen to on the way to work, right? This is something they do to de-stress. So if they don't want to deal with your antics, they'll just listen to the next person. So that's what you got to keep in mind when you decide that you want to speak out on certain things. But again, like I said, if your audience, like, for example, remember that Duck Dynasty show?
Mm-hmm.
Or even like the Duggars, right? People like them, they came out in support of Trump and there was no backlash because right. Their audience expected them to be in support of Trump. The reason Kanye is getting such backlash, one, is he's like super uneducated in the how he comes to his points. But the other thing is it's the exact opposite of what he's been telling us for the last 10 years that we've known him.
Right. Cool. So one question that just came to mind, and this goes back to the marketing for artists, and this is like my final two questions. So this is one, and then the next one will be the last question. But as far as an artist going up to start promoting, what is the time frame on which they should start building their campaign and start executing it?
So, I mean, right now we're in this weird kind of microwave era where, you know, you can record a song, mix it down, and have it on SoundCloud tonight if you wanted to. Right. And so the question isn't necessarily the time frame right now. If you were going more on the more traditional route and you decided that, okay, I want to put out an album, I want it to be in stores, right? That campaign could be anywhere from 6 months to a year. But because, you know, everyone's dropping surprise albums and things like that, it's kind of hard to plan that far in advance. But what I tell people to do is just, I mean, make music because you love making music, right? So if you're always recording, you've always got something that you could release at any given time. So then once you kind of build up a stash of music, then you can decide what you want to do with it. So a lot of what you're going to be doing as far as campaigns are going to depend on who you can get to pay attention, right? If you're going to be reaching out to blogs, you've got to start reaching out to those blogs between 2 and 3 weeks ahead of when you want your music to come out. If you're reaching out to magazines, it could be 3 to 4 months before you want your album to come out. And if you're looking at the bigger blogs, like a Rolling Stone or something like that, you know, it could be even 6 to 8 months before your album comes out when you start to put out those feelers like, hey, you know, I'm putting out this single, my album's going to come out this day. So, you know, that's what you can look at as far as a time frame. You know, if you look at, you know, and then that's just the pre-release, you know, and depending on how big of an artist you are and whether or not you decide to tour, you know, an album cycle can be anywhere from a year to 3 years. But again, as far as a timeline for someone who's just starting out, you know, what you're going to want to do is get a few records together, you know, your top three, your top four, and just put one out as a single and just promote it as hard as you can. Because if you don't have any contacts, it's going to be hard for you to get press for that first single. But you're going to be reaching out to the smaller blogs and the smaller internet websites, maybe reach out to some of the YouTube networks, because there's a lot of those. They're curators that have YouTube channels where they want to feature unreleased music or underground music, I should say. And so you'll want to reach out to people like that. And really, you know, the best way, like I said, is to really just kind of put all your efforts in the online space right now, because that's the quickest way to find fans and it's the most accessible. So you can use your budget to buy a couple of Facebook ads, make sure you have a nice video, a well-produced video that you can get people's attention with. And I'd say put some money behind that video and just give it a month or two to see how people respond to it. Based on those initial responses, you'll know, you know, whether you need to just kind of chill on that one and put out another song, or if you can continue, put more money behind it and start to get other opportunities that come from that one project.
Awesome. So Last question. We talked about Kanye, but I know you personally and know that you're a Jay-Z fan as well. So let's talk a little bit about Jay-Z and his impact, the impact that he's had on your life in comparison to Kanye.
So, that's funny. They kind of hold the same weight for me. I've been a Jay-Z fan since, like, I guess, like, the Blueprint came out. That's like when I first was old enough to buy my own music. That was what I was listening to. But what I've always loved about what Jay-Z represents is, like, he's always represented, like, the upper echelon. He's always, like, whatever is going on, I'm at the top of that. And what I love about Jay-Z over the years is his evolution. It's like no matter what's going on, Jay-Z finds a way to be the best at that thing, or at least stand among the best, right? And so it's Jay-Z is a case study in evolution and timeliness and not taking yourself too seriously. Because what the mistake a lot of artists make is feeling like they have to be the same person all the time, right? Like, oh, I gotta do what I got famous for. And what happens is they pigeonhole themselves. They don't want to listen to any new ideas. They don't want to be around any new energy. And especially in a genre like hip hop, if you're not dealing with what's new, then eventually you're going to be old, right? And some people may pay attention to you, but you're not going to be able to attract the attention of the masses if you're not willing to constantly evolve or give your spin on something else that's happening.
Awesome. So, this is the conclusion of the A-List podcast with Brandon Jackson. Is there any final words you have for any artists out there? And also, are you taking any artists? Because I know a couple people, maybe one, that might need your assistance. But this is the time where you got the open floor, man. You can, give your spill on some more KDMR music if you're accepting new artists, if you're not, those type of things, and just shout out everything that you're doing right now.
Sure. So I'm not taking on any artists on a management basis right now, but I do private consultations on an hourly for an hourly fee, so we can discuss that. If you're interested in that, you can always reach out to me. I'm on all social media at KDMR Music. On my personal social media, I'm at BJ Kicks. I'm sure Elliot will put those links in the show notes. But yeah, so. As far as any parting advice I may have for artists, the biggest thing I want you guys to make sure you do is just make sure you learn the business. There are so many resources out there. And what I'm fighting to do is to make it easier for you guys to access those resources and that information. Because when I was getting started in the business, when I started to take on my first management client, there's only a couple of ways you're going to get the knowledge. You can go to school, which I did. You can buy a million books, which I did. Or you can even purchase a coaching program from someone. And I did that as well, right? But by the time you read all those books, by the time you pay all that money for the coaching session, it might take you 4 or 5 years. And then you're like, oh, I'm not even into this anymore. But there are so many ways you can, like I said, I've got a YouTube channel. Right now, there's over 50 different videos talking about different aspects of the industry. I really have a podcast. It's called Music Business Dreams, where I interview artists and managers and all sorts of executives in the business to talk about different strategies for you. So there's no excuse. It's way easier in 2018 than it was even 5 years ago to really understand what's going on in the business. You want to know what royalties are. You want to know how you access that information. You want to know where you need to put your music so that you can have maximum impact. So study. Like, if there's one book I could recommend besides my own, because that'd be shameless, but I'd recommend a book by Ari Herstand, and it's called How to Make It in the New Music Business. And it's a great perspective from someone who was an independent artist and had to learn all of these strategies by himself without the help of a big famous manager or without the help of a label. And that'll kind of help you go from, being in your bedroom making music to starting to make some noise locally or regionally. So that's what I'd recommend. It's called How to Make It in the New Music Business by a guy named Ari Herstand. And then after that, I'd say read my book. My book is called The Music Marketing Guidebook, and you can find it at musicmarketingguidebook.com. I talk about online marketing strategies, but first I break down what exactly marketing is for those who may not know, and how it relates to music. Because the problem with a lot of the music marketing information that's out there now is it can be either way too specific and give you details that you don't need as a musician, or it's like these get rich quick schemes where they'll focus on, oh, here's how you can take $100 in Facebook ad revenue or ad money and use it to get 1 million fans. But I mean, that those strategies might work for right now, but Facebook is always changing their algorithm. Facebook's always changing their best practices. So if you don't understand the concepts behind some of those tactics that people use, then as soon as Facebook changes something, you're going to be left in the dust again. So my book breaks down the basics of marketing, certain concepts that are important for you to understand. And then we talk about how to implement those through some of those strategies, both online and offline, using things like press and collaborations and strategic partnerships and things like that. So all of that is available in my book. I'm working on the audiobook, and we're releasing an online program, a video course to go along with it soon. But again, you can find the information about all of that at musicmarketingguidebook.com.
Awesome. Brandon, thank you for joining us. Oh, I can't even call you Brandon. Kix, thank you for joining us here on the Airless Podcast. To those who are listening, you can do all of that he just said, because like that was a whole mouthful of information. You'll have his information in my show notes as well. Make sure you go follow him and support what he's doing. Also, make sure you are subscribed to the Airless Podcast. We'll be back with another episode soon. For everybody here, the Airlister, here's the Airlist of the Week, Brandon Jackson, right here on the Airless. Peace.
Thanks, man. Thanks again for having me.
For sure.
Peace.